This is the February 19th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. We have 30 minutes scheduled for this property. The hearing before us involves petition number 299 for property ID 4959000, and the property is owned by Bagley Properties, LLC. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We do have Greg Peterson here for the assessor's office and Greg LeBlanc here for the appellant. If you could both please raise your right hands now to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Yes.
Thank you. Just to remind everybody that we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of the property as of January 1st, 2024. Keep in mind the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as the outcome. And you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless there's any questions on procedure, I'm going to turn it over to you, Mr. LeBlanc, to tell us about this property.
Okay, thank you. So this is a two, three building, depending on how you look at it, property built in 1975, located in downtown Vancouver, has total rentable area of 65,675 square feet, and the issue here is we've got some differences in opinion. The assessor is we're both valuing on the income approach. The assessor is utilizing what we believe to be a very low 7% cap rate, and we're using a higher 9% cap rate, which we believe is in line with the market and the older age of the improvements. This is the 1975 construction, and the fact that very soon here, almost all of this property is going to be 100% vacant. So if you look on our evidence, page 3 shows an aerial photo of the property, and then we have some street scene photographs showing it's just kind of a mansard flat roof. This property is as classy as classy gets. It's been occupied by county agencies, I believe, and they are in the process of vacating the property. The property has been it has a short-term lease on one of the buildings. One of the buildings is entirely vacant. So building one was vacated in early 2023, and building two is on a short-term lease from August 1, 2024 through to March 31st of 2025. So really, as of January 1, 2024, the property was only 34% occupied. And by April 1 of 2025, it's going to be 100% vacant. If you look at page 4 of our evidence, you'll see that kind of what's driving the market. Currently, office was already in kind of a tight spot. And then we've had interest rates doubling between 2022 and 2023, and they've remained high as of January 1, 2024, and to this day. You can see the chart on page 4 of our evidence in figure A1 that shows the that compares the 10-year Treasury and the prime rate. Went from 1.76% the 10-year Treasury in January of 22 to 3.5% in January of 23 and up to 4% in January of 24. And the prime rate went from 3.25% in January of 22, and as of January 2024, it was at 8.5%, so more than doubled. And that's generally how it had a depressive impact on the market. The other issue is cap rates. I feel like on page P15 of our evidence, we have a cap rate survey from CBRE. This is the first half 2024 cap rate survey, and this is for office suburban properties. And one thing to point out is that they're only surveying Class A properties. And again, this is not a Class A property. This is an office building built in 1975. It has not been updated in many years. It's been occupied by government agencies. Anybody that's going into this building, unless they're going to want to go in as is, as at a dirt cheap rent, they're going to look to need some significant improvements here. The Class A office suburban rates for the Portland market, as of the first half of 2024, are between 8% and 10% for stabilized properties, and for value add Class A, and I guess you would call us value add because when your occupancy is below 40%, nowhere to go but up, we're at 10% to 12%. So again, we're projecting a 9% cap rate. So considering you know, what's happening in the market, the same survey reports that less competitive Class C spaces are seeing distressed pricing with cap rate estimates averaging in the low teens. So really office properties are struggling, and considering that we've got high vacancy and a Class C build out from and a 1975 age of the building, really that's all going to point to a high cap rate. If we look at page P17, we can see the cap rate from the CoStar report. So just looking at another source, and that shows cap rates just below 8.5% for office properties in the subject submarket. But again, if we would assume that there would be a higher cap rate for this property, considering the quality of the build out and the vacancy issue. So looking on page P18, you can see just this kind of illustrates the impact of the interest rates on the market from the peak of the market in Q1 of 2022 through to Q1 of 2024. CoStar is showing about a 14% decrease in values for office properties in the subject submarket. So with respect to the lease-up costs, we have to consider what's realistic here. And the owner has been attempting to lease up the property for some time. Nobody's interested in it. So we're looking at a very long lease up period, looking to be almost 3 years, if you want to be realistic about this. And so we've got about a 33-month lease up period that we've projected. and we projected a tenant improvement allowance at $25 a square foot. Really, that's fairly low for second generation space in the Pacific Northwest. PwC did a survey of tenant improvement allowances, and their tenant improvement allowances range from a low of $10 a square foot to a high of $150 a square foot, an average $72 a square foot. So again, we're projecting low tenant improvement allowance at $25 a square foot, assuming that what we're going to get in this space is a tenant that's interested in low rent and not super fancy space, because there's plenty of that available on the market in the Class A buildings in downtown. Really, this we're looking at kind of a low rent type tenant here. If you look on page P19, you can see the table from the PwC survey on tenant improvement allowances, and that's a survey from the first quarter of 2024. So it is recent. So that indicates average at $72 for second generation space, and $46 for renewals, and $108 for new shell space. So really, we're at $25 a square foot. So even with $25 a square foot, a 33-month lease up, we're looking at about $2.8 million in lease up costs for this property. The lease up projection is shown on page 10, and you can see that includes the lost rent and the tenant improvements. We're not projecting any reimbursement income. And we've also included 5% for leasing commissions and a 10% profit risk for this, because after all, we're looking at looks like 31 months total for the lease up. Our income approach is shown on page 11. Here we've projected a market rent at $24 a square foot full service, we've got a vacancy collection loss of 6%. We've got total expenses at 35%, and we've got a base cap rate of 9% plus the tax load of 0.93. So you've got a loaded cap rate of 9.93%. That results in a value of $9.7 million. From that, you have to, so that's a stabilized value. You have to deduct the lease up costs. So it's going to take time and money to get to that stabilized occupancy. So we're going to have to deduct $2.8 million. And that brings the value down to $6,872,700. And that works out to about $104 a square foot, which even that seems high to me, to be frank. We're seeing buildings in downtown Portland selling for less than $40 a square foot. And granted, not everybody wants to be in downtown Portland these days, but this is a Class C office building here. We've also supported our analysis with some sales. There's not great sales out there, so we've included some other sales, the sales that we've found in the downtown Vancouver market, and those sales are on pages 13 and 14, and they are considerably superior to what we are. Sale one is a Class A building. Sale 2 is a similar quality building built in 1975, located in Hazeldale, but much smaller, only 7,500 square feet. That's why that building's selling for $189 a square foot. We've got, again, 65,000 square feet, so much different buyer profile here. Sale 3 is a building in downtown Vancouver on Main Street. So this building was built in 1921, but it was significantly renovated in 2015. CoStar reported it was 100% leased at the time of sale. I'm not sure if that's accurate or not, but that sold for $156 a square foot. Sale 4 is a 1990s era building located off McLaughlin Boulevard in Vancouver. That sold for $186 a square foot, but again, only 9,900 square feet. Again, we're trying to use any sales we can. There's really no comparable sales out there for this vintage and size building. The other sales are sale 5 is newer, it built in 2007. Of note there, that sold at an 8.1% cap rate. And it's one of our high indicators at $239 a square foot, but it's again smaller at $25,463 square feet. And we have block 56 in downtown Vancouver. It's older, 1966 construction, but it had been completely renovated, occupies a full block, it's elevator served. It's got structured parking, and it's leased by Clark County on 20-year lease that started in September of 23 at, you know, $24 a square foot. It's considerably more appealing than a vacant Class C building that hasn't been occupied or been updated in quite some time. In conclusion, we have an old building. It's only 30%+ occupied as of 1/1/24. The tenant in there is a short timer, and this was well known to the owner. They did give them an extension, a short-term lease, but that is up at the end of March of this year. Very soon this property will be 100% vacant. In the past, the BTA has recognized lease-up costs for properties such as this. Any potential buyer looking at this property is, if they're an investor, they're going to be looking at a long timeline to bring this up to stabilize. If it's an owner user, they're going to be looking at some significant costs to bring it up to current standards as far as interior build out. Our analysis is a stabilized analysis that deducts out lease-up costs. Our analysis utilizes a 9% cap rate, which we contend is well supported by this market, and if anything, is low for a building of this vintage with this type of occupancy. With that, if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer.
The buildings, you say there's three buildings on the property?
It's, if we look at, let's see, we have our rent roll, or if we look at the income approach on page 11, shows buildings 1, 2, and 3. And so I think what we have is really two buildings, but we have one building has two wings on it. It's kind of L-shaped. If you look at page 3, you'll see an aerial, and you can see that L-shaped building, and then you've got another building to the east. So really, it's physically two buildings, but you can demise it into three separate spaces pretty easily.
Which building is the vacant one now?
I believe the L-shaped building is the vacant one.
Okay. And why is it not? I mean, you said it's been vacant since 22?
Yeah.
And why hasn't it been marketed and leased up since then?
It's being marketed. Nobody wants it. I mean, this is we've included the leasing flyer in our evidence here. If I can get down to it here. It's on pages 64. So starting on page 64, it's being leased, marketed by the Fuller Group, which is a well-known commercial brokerage in Vancouver. But again, you're looking at Class C office space that hasn't been updated in years. If you're looking for office space in this market, you have plenty of choices. And a lot of people that were formerly occupying Class C space are going up to Class A space because they can get Class A space at Class C rents now. You know, and that's, I mean,
that L-shaped building has been vacant since 22, and the other part has been rented, and it will be vacant in this year.
Yeah, I mean, they were a short timer as of, you know, the owner knew that as of 1/24, knew that they were going to be leaving the property. And
is that county renters now?
Yes.
Okay, and then you're projecting that it's going to take 3 years to lease up that building. Those buildings.
Yeah, I don't, considering that the vacancy, the time it's been on the market thus far.
So that big building has been on the market for 2 years already.
Yes.
Okay. And the comps that you have, comp sales are, you're saying are, well, I'm obviously looking at some of them, they're clearly more superior, others are not, but they're smaller spaces.
Yeah, there's we don't have any comparable sales here of this vintage in size building.
Okay. Any other questions, John or Lisa?
No, I don't have any questions.
No, I don't.
For the other bird.
I'm familiar with that building. It's
okay.
It's not
bizarre. It's just west of the old BOE offices that were down in the basement there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they go? Do you know if they're vacating to go into the Dolly Building? Nope.
I don't.
No, the county offices that are in that office, I do not think will be going in the Dolly, but nothing is finalized. But as of right now, I don't think that is the plan. It's CJC, the Children's Justice.
I thought they were moving out of the Dolly Building for some reason. The county was moving out of the Dolly Building, but maybe not. Okay.
Change 13, Lisa.
Most of the tenants, it's my understanding, most of the tenants that were in this Bagley Building are now in the building that Greg spoke to earlier. One of the sales, I forget the address, but it's the old City Hall there off of Mill Plain. Most of those offices are moving into that building, and I believe they're owned by the same people.
So all right, Greg, let's hear from you.
Yeah. So,
Peterson. Sorry.
Sounds good. Yep. So yeah, it does sound like a dire situation, and then the building is, there's definitely some desirability issues with that building, as if you've walked by, you're aware. Just a couple points that I want to make. If you look at the income approach that the county's prepared and the income approach that Greg LeBlanc prepared, they're very similar as far as the ending value. I think he was at 9.7 mil and we're at 9.4. And that's with the differing factors of a cap rate. We're using a 7 cap, using a 9. He's projecting higher rents than what we have. He's using a market vacancy of 6%, which he had showed in his documentation. And we're using a 15% vacancy on that building. And keep in mind that when you're using direct capitalization in the value of a property, that vacancy is over the life of the property, not a single point in time. So we've recognized that building has shortfalls and are using a higher vacancy number than is what we typically would use downtown, that being a 15% vacancy to accommodate for some of those shortfalls the building has. Now, does that 15% vacancy that is higher than market account for the shortfalls it's currently suffering through? And I think we can agree no, because we couldn't have anticipated a 66% vacancy and then now to be 100% vacancy. That's just not typical. But the 15% vacancy we're using is to accommodate for the property over the life of the property's usefulness. So that is a higher than market, which we're trying to address. The other point that I just like to point to is that I agreed with Greg that the sales, very difficult to find a very solid comparable sale. Agreed. But we only have what sells. And if you look at what has sold and you look at what they are selling at on a per square foot basis, they're still selling for more than what we have the subject properties appraised at, which is about $142 a square foot. So there are properties, although imperfect, that are indicating that the market for an office is greater than what we have on the property. I'm not trying to talk away the issues the property has, but there are some market indicators showing that there is a baseline for what these properties are selling for, and the subject is still valued less than that. Beyond that, I'm not going to argue particulars with the property. I think Greg did a good job of explaining the issues the property has, and we're trying to recognize that. A lot of times our vacancy rates that we're using in downtown are at 10 or even 5%, and we're using a 15 on this property, and the 7% cap was in line with when the property was reappraised. I believe the reappraisal on that property was 3 years ago. So those really are the only points I'd like to speak to. Does the property warrant some type of a lease-up cost? In the previous hearing, I completely agree with Greg that there are times that a lease-up cost and lease-up allowance is warranted. But nearly a third of the value of the property, I believe that's excessive and not warranted. Some type of recognition, I think, is reasonable, but not a third of the value on this property.
Okay.
And those are really the only points that I'd like to make. I appreciate the information Greg provided. I had a chance to look at it yesterday. It's definitely, as we move into the reappraisal of downtown, it's definitely something we need to look at closer with our office properties and the valuation thereof. That being said, it's amazing. They're still building office in downtown Vancouver, showing that there is a market. So that's really all I have. Any questions, I would be happy to answer to the best of my ability.
So I just want to make sure, Greg Peterson, first, you're asking for a value of $9,327,000?
We're asking to sustain the value, which was what, nine? Let me get to the actual.
Because it says, according to this, unless I missed a page, that Greg LeBlanc's asking for $7,841,000.
Well, if you look at it, so we're asking to sustain the value, which is 9.4. In Greg's information, I was speaking to his income approach. His income approach had indicated 9.7 mil, and then there's less a 2.8 million of allowance, which puts it in the 6.8 or so. Our income approaches are very similar. The ending number is very similar. It really comes down to what is a reasonable allowance for lease up cost on this building, and it's my belief that a third of the value is excessive. But that's my opinion on this property. I would have had this property been recently reappraised, we would have addressed it in some type of lease up cost, but not to that level. Because then you're looking at, go ahead.
So for purposes of this hearing, you didn't really do any kind of reappraisal. Did you just take previous information and?
Correct. This was a property that was reappraised 3 years ago, and we just utilized that information. And no excuses. I'm actually filling in for someone who retired, and I am doing my best to understand the appraisal that was prepared. But there were no allowances made for this property. Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
I don't have any other questions.
Dan, you're muted.
The building is designed primarily for one tenant or two tenants, maybe three tenants. Is that correct? It's not divided. In other words, it's not divided so that you have partitions between offices and you could have a door and an office. You could rent it to 20 or 30 different people.
No, it was primarily to, I believe, two tenants. If you look on leasing flyer page 65, for the L-shaped building, at least, it shows a building plan of the build out, and it looks like it's kind of a cubicle type build out. So, which, you know, might be good. That you have a lot of open space, but you would have to go in and demise it for sure.
Yeah, so it doesn't lend itself to being partitioned to smaller offices and several different tenants. Then it's designed primarily for one or two tenants. I guess with the two separate buildings, you could have two tenants.
In its current layout, that's my understanding as well. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know what your comps are, whether they're individual offices or whether they're or individual units or whether that's all one building.
In the comparable sales we prepared, they're mostly multi-tenant, unless there were a couple sales that were small enough, you know, 10 to 15,000 square feet where it is one tenant, whereas this building is 60,000 plus, and really as in its current layout is without any type of modification is a two-tenant property. That doesn't mean modifications couldn't be made to make it multi-tenant, but that's not the current layout of the property.
I've been inside that building, and it was big rooms with a bullpen kind of, yeah.
I don't have any questions on it.
Nope, nor do I.
I think we have a good picture of it. All right.
If I can just, you know.
Anything else to add, Mr. LeBlanc?
There's a couple of BTA decisions that consider, you know, lease up costs for vacant office buildings and basically state that, you know, if you have an office building with some significant vacancy, you have to consider the lease up costs. So these are BTA decisions 76773 and 91159. So if you want some interesting reading, you can read some BTA cases on this issue. I just also wanted to point out that that Zoom Info has built 366,000 square feet of space in downtown or on the waterfront, and that's brand new Class A space. They had leased the space, but there's an article from the Business Journal that I've attached. It's the last couple pages of our evidence that reports that in May of 24 that they have put up half that space up for sublease. So they're not taking the space and they're looking to lease it up. And why is that, large users are kind of pulling back in their space needs as we, work from home dynamic going on. Employers are only requiring their employees to come into the office a few days a week or a couple days a week, and so that just all leads to lower space needs there. So we don't know where this work from home dynamic is going to shake out. Some large employers, you might have heard, like Amazon up in Seattle is requiring people to come back 5 days a week, but that just started recently. Since kind of with the pandemic, everybody got comfortable with working from home, and people have really embraced that. So it's really, that's where we're seeing this impact on office buildings.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. I think we got it.
Yep.
Thank you. You'll hear from us within 30 days.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Greg.
Yep. Take care.
This is the February 19th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. We have 30 minutes scheduled for these properties. The hearings before us involve multiple property IDs for cases 326 through 345. All of these properties are owned by Narayanan LLC, and they consist of the Willow Creek Homes. Board members present by video conference are Joan Marks, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We do have Susan Peterson here for the Assessor's Office and Greg LeBlanc here for the appellant. If you could please raise your right hands now to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. I won't give you the spiel again about who we are and what we do. So go ahead, Greg, and tell us about these properties.
Well, if you look on page one of our evidence, we have the parcel numbers and the requested values. Unfortunately, we don't have the hearing numbers correlated with that, but that's the best I can do. I'm going to be talking about these properties all as a single entity, a single economic unit, and that's how we've analyzed them. They are townhomes. They were built in 2015 and 16, and they're currently leased, and that's how they've been operated since they were built. So we have 32 units here. There are four fourplexes, six duplexes, and four single-family detached homes. If you look on page three of our evidence, you can see an aerial of the property and how it's laid out. You can see that the fourplex buildings that are located along the north side of the property. We've got on the interior kind of courtyard area, there's the four detached homes. And then we've got six duplex buildings on the other side of that. So really the units, the average about 1,632 square feet. They range in size from an 1,154 square foot two bedroom, two bath up to the 1,867 square foot four bedroom, three bath units. So all the duplex and fourplexes have a single car garage, and the four detached single family homes each have a two car garage. Finishes include stainless steel kitchen appliances, granite counters, and all the units have washer dryers. So if you look on page four, there's some exterior pictures of the units. And so we have about just over $1.5 million difference in value. Our conclusion is that the highest and best use of the property is that it should is a for rent property, which is where it's been used by the current owner. The assessor values it as basically single family homes and townhomes. Our contention is that if you're going to sell them as such, the current owner would incur some additional costs in a sellout model for 32 individual town homes. And there would be some holding costs for insurance, real estate, sales broker fees, things like that. And it would take, you know, several months to sell the properties or possibly 2 years.
Excuse me, Greg. One quick question. These are all separately metered and laid out so they could be sold individually?
I don't know. If I look at it,
they are.
I would assume they are, just looking at the expenses, which are relatively low historically, if we don't include, they're not including insurance. They haven't included insurance. We've projected insurance, but even then we're at below 20% before taxes. So I would assume that they are separately metered.
And they are all currently rented?
Yes.
They're not individually owned?
No.
Okay.
So they're all under single ownership. But at the same time, if you sold them all off in bulk, you know, there would be a bulk sale discount. If you're looking to do that. You know, there's a number of issues that are impacting the market. We've already gone over the high interest rates that chart on page A1 shows the increase in interest rates. We're comparing the 10-year treasury and the prime rate. So over a 2-year period between January 22 and January 24, and we can see that those rates have more than doubled. If we look at page P17 A2, we can also see the dramatic increase in the 30-year mortgage rates. So with respect to multifamily conditions in Vancouver, what we've seen in 23 and 24 has been an increase in vacancy. We've seen vacancy go up above 5% for this area for the Vancouver submarket. CoStar is reporting a 7.9% vacancy. And as far as rent growth, a bit muted at 1.9% in 2024. The year before, 2023, it was negative 2.1%. So if you see the chart on page P18 in A4, you can see that the daily asking rents are just kind of popped out in mid-2022 and have remained flat since then. With the significant increase in interest rates, we've also seen sales volume really tail off. CoStar noted that that there was only $137 million in sales in the market versus the 5-year average of $423 million. So sales volume is about a quarter of where it was. We can see that sales volume in chart on P19, and you can see that the value peaking in mid-2022 and then going down and essentially bottoming out in early 24. And so you can see the decrease in both the price per unit for both Vancouver and Portland. And you can also see a decrease in the sales volume, where you can see that sales volume, you know, relatively strong in 19, 20, and 21, and then tailing off once interest rates started to increase. So the bar chart is the sales volume, and the lines are the price per unit in figure A5. The other issue is capitalization rates. If on the following page, on page figure A6 on page 10, you can see that the interest rates have jumped up and essentially working their way to their peak in January of 2024 at looks like around 5, between 5.4 and percent and 5.5%. So it's around that way. The CBRE survey also notes that for cap rates in suburban Portland market, those are ranging between 5.75% and 6.5%. We've attached that survey as evidence. So getting to the meat of the matter, if we look on page 11 of our evidence, is the income analysis. So we've projected market rent at $2,357 average rent. We've got some expense reimbursements in there. We've got a 5% vacancy collection loss. And we've got expenses before taxes at 19.6% of effective gross income. So we're using a base cap rate of 5.25% plus a tax load of 0.93%. That gives us a loaded cap rate of 6.18%. So our NOI before taxes is $704,000. So that
704,000 divided by 6.18 results in a value of just under 11.4 million or 356,000 per unit. We've supported our analysis with sales, and those sales range between $333,000 per unit and $393,000 per unit, and average $358,000 per unit. These are all similar townhome communities located in Clark County and built between 2020 and 2023. So these sales are all newer than the subject. We call it slightly newer, were built in 2015 and 16. And you can see those sales. We've got a map on page 14. They're located reasonably close to the subject. We've got an adjustment chart for the sales, and after adjustments for market conditions and location, age, condition, unit features, and average unit size, we get values that range between, looks like, 333,000 and 379,000 per unit, and average 358,000 per unit. So the average is very similar to our requested value. So just in conclusion, we feel that these properties, they've always been leased. If they were put on the open market, they would, a typical investor would look to purchase them. If they were going to buy them and then turn around and sell them, there would be, they would get a bulk sale discount. If the owner decided to go ahead and sell the units individually, there would also be a sell-off period as well, and there would be holding costs for that as well. In the end, we feel that the property is supported by an income analysis, since it's an income producing property.
Okay, I don't have any other questions.
No, I don't have any at this point.
No, I don't have any at this point, yeah.
Susan, would you tell us about the county position?
Sure. I provided sales for each building plan, so I can go over those if you'd like. Otherwise, I will just do you want to look over each set of sales?
Just give us a general overview.
Just give us an overview. You've got comparable properties for each building style that there is in that complex, and those building styles then produce the values that you give for each of the properties. Is that correct?
That's correct. So I have provided individual sales of zero lot lines and single family residences. Point of order, all of these structures were built using single family residential permits, so there are no townhouse permits or duplex permits. They might have that style, but they were not permitted and built as such. A duplex has special zoning, for example, I just want to make that clear. So it's a mix of single family.
What's the significance of that?
Well, I noticed that Greg was calling them duplexes, and a duplex is considered a multifamily use by the county. You'll often see them on corner lots. The zoning is different. A zero lot line is considered single family residence, and just as an SFR is. The difference is it has a shared wall. So if it looks like a duplex in this particular development, it's actually classified and was permitted as a zero lot line home or shared wall, whatever you like to call it.
Got it. Okay.
Even though they have never been used that way, they've always been used as rentals.
Well, I think an interesting point of order is that this was developed and recorded as a single family residential, a single family residential properties, and that does include zero lot lines. And you can see that in the CC&Rs that I provided. Several homes were built, and I think they were actually condominiumized, and they're excluded from this appeal. There are also four that are privately owned within the same subdivision that are part of this, but excluded from this appeal because they have different ownership. They were built and then purchased by the current owner as single family residences, and they can choose to rent them if they would like to, but that doesn't change their legal status. At any rate, I have provided comps. It sounds like you've looked them over. They are the best available for each plan, meaning the square footage is the same for each of them if they're included on the same comp sheet. Values of the assessor are supported. What I would like to point out is that the owner did combine four townhouses onto a single tax parcel for tax purposes in two instances. That doesn't change the legal use of those properties. It just means they get one tax bill for them. They could split those back out because they're each on legal lots of record, a subdivision lot, with a simple request to the county's land records department. There's no cost to it. There's really no delay. Although they were combined, those are four separate legal lots, and that's an important thing to keep in mind. So Washington state law requires that properties be assessed at their highest and best use. In this case, although operated as rentals, the highest and best use is as single family residences, and those are the comparables that I provided. This is per WAC 457-07-030-3. And unless specifically provided otherwise by statute, all property shall be valued on the basis of its highest and best use for assessment purposes. Highest and best use is the most profitable, likely use to which a property can be put. It is the use which will yield the highest return on the owner's investment. Any reasonable use to which the property may be put may be taken into consideration, and if it is peculiarly adapted to some particular use, that factor may be taken into consideration. I would posit that these are nothing different than what you normally see. There is a subdivision of single family homes right next to it. If you look at Greg's map, which is better than the county map, you know, I can go over the definition of highest and best use, but I think that the board members and Greg are all well aware of those three tenants. It's the basic appraisal principle. I mentioned I provided the subdivision map in my evidence, the CC&Rs, and my position is that if there was a highest and best use case analysis done, I think you have it in front of you, the petitioner's analysis as income returning a lower value basically proves that the SFR use is higher and better, or the highest and best use. And therefore, that is, as mandated by the statute, the value that the assessor must put on the property. And that's what we've done.
Was this a change from previous years, or have you always valued them as single family?
We've always valued them as single family.
Okay. So this is not a change?
No.
Okay.
I also wanted to point out that it's not appropriate to discuss a takedown schedule for single-family residential properties. There are several BTA cases that state that. I think it's more of a commercial or income property approach. So, in addition to that, I think we all know that inventory for single family residences is very low in Clark County. The median price in January 2024 was in the mid fives for a single family residence. And these values are well below that, as you can see. Regarding market condition, that to the assessor would be on a single family property would be a time adjustment from the beginning sale period to the ending sale period, which would be January 1, 2024 in this instance. And we determined during that time frame that there really the market was relatively flat and there was no upward or downward general trend that needed to be applied to our sales. So you don't see a time adjustment. Again, we don't put adjustments on for differences in the mortgage interest rate. That's all reflected in decreased sale price, if anything, for homes.
When you said it's not appropriate to discuss a takedown schedule, what are you saying, meaning by that? Just take it down from single family to, what is that?
I'm sorry. That's a term that I meant to apply toward things that Greg was mentioning regarding holding costs and other things that are relevant to an income property, perhaps, but really are not applicable to a single family property.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Okay. So I guess what I'm hearing and seeing here is the big difference between whether or not these are an apartment type rental property that you take all or none, or back to the single family where you can pick and choose, buy one, buy two, but you are not in the assessor's office. You're looking at them as individual properties, Greg, looking at them as a single unit for the whole works in your value approaches.
Is that a question? I'm sorry.
I guess that's okay. The way I'm seeing it. Is that the way you're doing it? That's the way it's right. Being done. Is that correct?
And so I want to be clear, for the assessor, we are mandated by state law to determine the highest and best use and to value them as such. And I can provide you with a WAC number again, but we can't treat them as income producing properties if that returns a lower value after doing a highest and best use analysis. A property owner can rent their property. They're free to do anything they want with it. It doesn't mean that would that use and that valuation is going to return the highest market value. You know, we have to look at that.
Have these properties been appealed before for this reason?
No.
Okay.
I don't have any other questions.
Yeah, I don't either.
I got it. All right. Anything else you want to add, Mr. LeBlanc?
No, I mean, you know, they would be, I mean, they're operated as rentals. If you sold them on the market after they've had a number of years of being rented, there would certainly be some costs to update and prepare them for sale. But you know, we definitely have a difference of opinion on how investors would approach this property.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Right.
Close the hearing.